The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Greetings and welcome to the Dynamics of Colorism with your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth. You may call in to share your experiences, colorism, to pose a question, or just to give a general comment. You may do so by dialing area code 914-338-1308. And now, to begin our show, here's Dr. Culbreth. Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Dynamics of Colorism for Thursday, May 2nd, 2013. I'm your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth, and I'm coming to you live from Windsor Mill, Maryland, where the Dynamics of Colorism will come to you every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. First and foremost, listeners, I'd like to thank you for bearing with us over the past couple of weeks. We've gone through some serious issues with technical problems on the side of Block Talk Radio, but we've been assured that they've all been cleared up. They put measures in place to prevent any more malicious attacks on their servers. So we're back up and running again, and I look forward to our shows, and I'd like to extend a sincere apology to Dr. Horch Freeman, who was there twice to be on the show, and due to technical issues, we had to cancel. But she will be back on the show hopefully next Thursday, which will discuss colorism and Brazilian families. Well, tonight we have a wonderful show. We're going to discuss colorism within the Asian community, and our guest is Professor Julie Jung Kim. Now, Professor Kim teaches writing, research, and communications and biblical studies in the Chicago area. While finishing her master's degree in ministry at Moody Theological Seminary, she continues to lead various mom organizations and groups, and she writes her blog, which is really interesting, titled More Than Just Mama.wordpress.com, and you must go there and visit and read her blog. She's also interested in race and culture issues within society. She's a proud member of Redbud Writers Guild. She's also married to her husband, Peter. They've been married for 12 years. They have two wonderful children. You may reach Professor Jung Kim on Twitter with the ampersand sign, Julie Jung, J-U-N-G, Kim. Good evening, Professor Jung Kim. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for being available. This is going to be exciting. What we've been doing with the Interracial Colorism Project, as you know, is that we've expanded our focus. We're not just looking at specific groups when it comes to colorism. We're looking at people of color in general, because
right.
You know, colorism affects people of color across the board inside the United States and outside of the United States. And I'm so happy that we have expanded and have wonderful guests like yourself coming on the show to discuss these issues and how they affect each particular group within society. Now, before we begin, listeners, what I wanted to go over again is so that we understand, when we start talking about colorism, what we're doing is we're looking at a distinction, and this is what colorism is defined as. It's a distinction based on your skin color, whether you're light, medium, or dark complexion, and it results in either the favorable or the disparate treatment of individuals based on the lightness or the darkness of their skin color. Now, we also understand that colorism occurs interracially and interracially. When we say interracially, it means people from opposite racial groups, being involved in colorism acts. For example, you can have a white person who's treating a darker complexion, Indian, Asian, or black person disparately, or vice versa. but it's always that distinction based on skin tone, skin color rather. And when we start talking about it intraracially, that's within the same racial group where you can have black on black, Asian on Asian, Indian on Indian. And the bottom line is that colorism in any shape or form, it's really detrimental to the psychological well-being of victims. So what we want to make sure of is that when we start talking about colorism, we have discussions that we understand exactly what constitutes colorism. There are times in which it actually colorism can also include the phenotypes of individuals. When we say phenotypes, we're talking about their facial features exactly, other than skin color. Their nose, the shape of the nose, whether it's broad, wide, or slim. We're talking about their lips, exactly whether the lips are thin or thick or wide lips, the actual complete facial structure. So, and the hair texture also comes into play at times. So far in the Colorism Project, since we've expanded, we have had guests where we discussed colorism within the Latino community with Dr. Quiros, colorism within the Asian Indian communities with Professor Abrams, and today we're going to talk with Professor Julie John Kim on how colorism affects the Asian community. So everybody sit back, put in your seatbelts, and prepare for a wonderful ride. Okay, Professor John Kim, let's start with how does colorism actually affect the Asian community?
How does it affect the Asian community? Well, you know, the big way that's been affecting the Asian community is you can see it through the advertisements. Most recently, if you have been paying attention to, like, some of the Huffington Post articles or even YouTube, there's been, especially in the Indian community, those commercials that, you know, are advocating if you want to have brighter, more fair skin, that what you have to do is have, you know, certain wipes that will lighten your skin. And I don't mean just in the face, but I mean even in, you know, the female private areas. And, you know, that's caused a lot of uproar because in the Asian community, it's considered if you're white or more pale, you're more beautiful, you're more accepted, you're of the higher social class. Whereas if you're dark-skinned, you're, you know, considered part of maybe a gang member, someone of the lower class who has worked all their life in the sun, and that's what's made them more dark-skinned. And also you see that in the last 15 years, there's just become more lightening creams on the market that, you know, you can get in the drugstores, especially in the nice, you know, more brand name kind of stores where you can get it on every single shelf. And that's been something that was brought over from many of the Asian countries, and it's now popular here in America.
Wow. Yeah, I have noticed that. You know, you made a good point when you referenced that they're even encouraging women to lighten their skin in their private parts. Doesn't that result in them maybe getting some type of female issues or problems?
Yes. Low self-esteem, and even you see, you know, a lot of women who, you know, they're feeling the pressure to lighten their skin because, you know, when you're a teenager or when you become of marrying age, if your skin is not light, then you will have a difficult time finding a future spouse. And, you know, I have a lot of college students in my class, and I ask them, you know, they're of African-American, Asian, Hispanic race, and I'll ask them, you know, would you ever consider marrying a dark-skinned person? I mean, and they've always responded to me and said, you know, I would definitely date someone who's dark-skinned, but I don't want a black baby. And, you know, each language, each culture has a word for the term black baby.
Right. And
yeah.
And see, that's sad because you're so conditioned into believing that, you know, that white skin or close proximity to whiteness is actually, you know, the ideal look. And
right.
It's so sad. But you know what, how does it work when we start looking at skin color? And let's say the other phenotypes, like their noses or their lips or their hair texture, does that play a significant role within Asian community? Whereas, say, someone may have darker skin and curlier hair and maybe have a broader nose and fuller lips. Does that make a big difference also?
Yes, it does. And recently there was an article out, and I'm forgetting where it's from, but it was saying, you know, the last 10 years, the women who have won, like the Miss Korea pageants, they all have the exact same look. They all went to the same plastic surgeon. They all have the big eyes, the narrow nose, the not too big full lips, the very pale skin.
Wow.
And so now you have, you know, for you to be considered beautiful, now you have to have pale skin. But now the pressure is becoming, you know, you have to have a certain kind of look.
And you know what? They're actually going in for having the surgery. So would it be fair to say that they're actually considering, or they actually do have the plastic surgery to make their noses more narrow and the lips thinner?
Yes, and they're even going as far as to what's popular now is they're getting their what is it called, their chin chiseled down so that their face will look more narrow, because Asians were known for our round facial features.
Right.
So they'll get that chiseled down. And the funny thing is, as much as many people think that it's because they want to look more westernized, it's actually a lot of the pressure that Asian women feel is from, you know, their grandmothers, their mothers. It's within the culture that puts the pressure on these women to, you know, lighten their skin or have the plastic surgery, because that is what's considered beautiful.
And where are they getting all of this from? Where is this, how is this infiltrating the Asian community? Like where, like for example, when it comes from the grandmothers and the mothers, are they really stuck on the light skin or the white skin as a sign? For them, is that a sign of beauty or of being successful?
Yeah. So definitely it's coming from, you know, our Confucian dynasty that says, the lighter skin, you're more beautiful. Because years ago when women, you know, they were not as equal to men, the way that women would feel their empowerment is through maintaining their beautiful skin. So therefore, they would always, you know, take the steps, whether carrying an umbrella or just making sure that they have white face powder on their face to make themselves seem more pale. Because it's through marriage that they can raise up in social class. So that's why that fair skin was pressed upon the Asian women. Because that was, you know, the way that they sought power and status. They could get married, you know, they could hold a better job, because even employers, that's what they wanted. It's not about your qualifications all the time. It's about the way that you look. And what's happened now in society is in Korea, there's this big uproar, but men are now getting the plastic surgery, and now they're even taking the steps to maintain their white skin.
Wow.
Because, you know, the job market is not very good in Korea, but the way to have a better chance of getting a job is the way you look. So they're getting their hair done before they go in for job interviews. They're getting their nose done, their eyes done. They're making sure that their skin is also pale. So it's not just the women who are feeling the extreme pressure.
And it's amazing, because now we're seeing, when you start seeing it pass over to the men, then we know this really is a systemic, I would consider it almost a systemic issue that definitely needs to be addressed. Because,
right.
And I also think, is this when they have this focus, where they really have this dogged belief or this passion to make their skin look pale or white or lighter, and changing their noses for the plastic surgery and straightening out the hair. My concern is when it comes to the employment sector, and you start looking around, if someone was to walk into an actual work environment and see basically all pale-faced or light-complexion Asian people within that particular employer, I would think that would send a message loud and clear that there's some type of discriminatory practices here. Do they focus in on discriminatory issues in Korea when it comes to the workplace? Do they have any recourse if an employer says or gives the impression that they don't want to hire someone because they're dark complexion with, you know, broader facial features?
Well, actually, I would like to say that there are discriminatory practices in place, but actually, you know, it's kind of an a very accepted thing to be doing in the society, that you will get a job based on your looks, and your looks will take you further, even though the person next to you that's applying for the job has the qualification.
Wow. Interesting.
So it's very, very accepted. And the funny thing is, you know, I've also read in the news in the last 10 years where, you know, all these women are getting plastic surgery, and then, you know, when they decide to have their first child, what happens is the men turn to the women and say, you must have had an affair, because there's no way that this child is mine, looks nothing like me, looks nothing like you. And the reason is because these women have such extreme plastic surgery that, you know, the baby obviously looks like the mother, but because of the surgery, you know, the husband then tries to, you know, say, you had an affair on me because this baby looks nothing like us.
And then, and especially if she's bleached her skin and the baby comes out, and if her skin is dark and the baby comes out dark like her, then it's issue. So basically, I guess it's an accepted practice for them to bleach the skin, but, you know, does having the darkest skin or the lightest skin, and let's say, let me go back and erase that question. If they possess more European-type phenotypes with the straighter hair, the narrow nose, the very, very pale white skin, do they try to pass for white?
No. They don't. They're not trying to pass for white. They're doing it more because within the Asian culture, this is just more of what's accepted, more of what's pressed upon you if you want to be accepted, if you want to be considered beautiful, if you want to be someone who is considered someone of high value because of your light skin. I mean, there's even this thing in the Japanese culture, this old saying that says pretty much like if a woman has a white skin, then the white skin makes up for 7 defects. So therefore, they're willing to overlook imperfections because, you know, a woman has white skin. And that's why it is so important for a woman to have this white skin, you know, to the point that it will cause health problems. They don't care. These women don't care because, you know, they know how highly sought after white skin is.
Right, you know, and you made a good point there with when you brought up the health problems, because earlier when Dr. Ronald Hall, and he runs what's called the Color Clinic, and he's a leading expert in skin color issues and colorism in the United States, and now he's actually taking the studies outside of the United States, and he made a good point of noting that women were bleaching their skin and using homemade remedies and creams and rubs, and the end result was that even though their skin may have been bleached and it turned lighter, there were serious side effects that affected their health. And one of the main issues was that they were having stillborn babies because those chemicals were being absorbed into the bloodstream. And it was really, you know, that skin bleaching and the techniques and the chemicals they were mixing together were so dangerous. To them, it was worth the risk, I would assume, to possess that light skin.
Yes. And I mean, even in my community, if you can't afford to get your skin bleached or have some kind of chemical peel done by a professional, then there are, you know, remedies that you can find on YouTube or your grandmother or your great-grandmother knew of that she used that will lighten your skin. And it's not always the most healthy method of doing it, but if it works, like these women are so desperate to get their skin white, or, you know, these grandmothers or mothers are so desperate to get their daughters to have white skin that they're willing to do this. They don't care about the ramifications.
That's sad. That is so sad. Yeah. I mean, just, you know, it's unbelievable to think that people will go to these measures or extremes just to change the color of their skin. You know, let me ask you this. Here in the United States, historically, and this is how colorism has affected Black Americans, where they were always being put down, treated disparately when their skin was darker, whether it was interracial colorism or interracial colorism at play. Now, and there's also something they called white privilege, where people who were white or had skin color in close proximity to white skin or the light skin, believed that they were privileged and they were entitled. How does, when we start looking at the Asian community, when somebody has a very fair skin, do they actually reap better benefits or do they have privileges just because their skin is light?
Well, definitely, like in the families, you'll see if a mother has a dark-skinned daughter and a dark-skinned daughter, definitely the mother will most likely push the dark-skinned daughter to, you know, definitely go for education. Because, and may even say, you know, this is the only way that you will rise up in society. Whereas the lighter-skinned daughter, she will, you know, not really worry about as much because they know that even if she's not as physically attractive, because of her fair skin, she will be easier to marry off and she will have an easier time rising up in society, getting a job, being accepted in the Asian society. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of white privilege in the Asian society. And, you know, because the color of your skin gives a person their identity and their worth. And, you know,
right.
Asians know that.
Now, what about the darker complexion? Let's say we have a darker complexion, women or even just children, because colorism is so detrimental. And when you say to someone, you're better than this person, or you have to go to school and work really hard. And in saying that, there was a couple of months ago, Denzel Washington, an actor, had made a comment, I think during an interview or somewhere within on the web, where he told his daughter, who was dark complexion, that she would have to work harder to be successful because she is dark skin. So in the Asian community, how do you think a dark complexion Asian feels knowing that, okay, I already have one, my skin color is going to hold me back in life, whereas I'm looking at my sister or my brother or my cousin who has a very fair skin and have more opportunities and privileges, how does that make that darker complexion one feel? I mean,
well, I think you know, sadly, from a young age, they know that they are less. For example, my daughter, my husband and I, we are both fair-skinned individuals, but my daughter has a dark skin, and she's constantly, I mean, I will just be shopping with her, minding my own business in an Asian market, and I will have so many grandmothers just approach me saying, your dark child, like, oh, it's
oh,
such,
wow.
Such a shame that she has nice round eyes and a nice round nose, but she's, you know, a black baby.
Oh, my goodness. Does your daughter hear this?
Yes.
How
and,
old is she?
You know, she's 9 years old. And there was even a time where, you know, during last summer, she went swimming with her father, and she got a little suntan. And as we were walking to church, I go to a prominently Asian church. These women just stopped me as we were walking to church and said, oh, my goodness, did you not put sunscreen on your daughter? She's black.
Oh, my.
Why would you do that? Like, do you not care about her? How can you let that happen to her?
Oh, my
and
God.
Immediately, my daughter hid behind me and was horrified, and she ran to the bathroom. And I remember just racking my brain. What am I going to say? What am I going to say? What am I going to say? And she looked in the mirror and said, well, I don't see what the problem is if my dark skin. I'm still beautiful, right, Mommy? I'm still beautiful. And I said, absolutely, you're beautiful. And the color of your skin does not define who you are because you have so many other good things to offer the world.
That's right.
And I think that's what we have to teach, you know, our the young generation, that it's okay. The older generation pushes upon the younger generation that they need to have the white skin. But, you know, and even people of my own age, I'm in my mid-30s, you know, they still have a lack of identity if their skin is not white. They feel lost.
Right.
Having the white skin defines who they are. And so they're always trying to maintain it. Even my girlfriends, they'll go and get laser done to their skin to remove any kind of freckle, any kind of imperfection, because they want that fair, pure-looking skin that's pressed upon in society, in our Asian magazines, on TV shows. The actors are all these very European, you know,
that is true.
Looking women, you know, and they look nothing like Asians. I mean,
and
they don't have our nose, they don't have our eyes, so it's hard.
They look European, you know, and it's sad because what bothers me is like when an adult can actually be so rude as to actually approach a parent with a child with them, and you know, it's one thing to say it to the parent when it's just the parent and the other adult, which is even still rude and unacceptable. But to be so, you know, I call it insensitive, and having no compassion to say in front of the child that she's so dark. Whereas, if you weren't, thank goodness that you're a good, positive mom and that you're aware of these issues, because you can instill in her that she is beautiful and that the color of your skin does not define who you are, or say that you're beautiful or you're not beautiful. And it's just so sad because even though we see this in the Asian community, it's in the Black community, the Asian Indian community, the Latino community, it's across the board. And you're right, you made a valid point, because it seems that older generation, they really have that big hang up with that, with the skin color. And what I noticed a couple of months ago when I used to go in and really monitor my Twitter feed, where there were issues there, where I noticed young teens and maybe a little older, the early 20s, they were always having this light skin, dark skin dynamic going on. And what is so disturbing is that people don't understand how it can affect, you know, someone's self-esteem, how they view themselves. I had a conversation with a colleague the other day, one of the faculty members I work with, and she's working with me on a project of conducting a test of children and skin color issues, and she made a point of referencing a situation where a little Black girl in her class was scratching her skin, her legs, excessively, and to the point that it turned like that ashy look. So she walked over to the little girl and asked her if she was okay, if it was itching, or if she wanted some lotion or cream to put on. And the little girl responded and said, no, but when I scratch it, it looks white.
Oh.
So the child was literally, a little dark-skinned Black girl was literally, she believed in her mind that if she kept scratching at her skin like that, it would turn ashy. And to her, that ashy represented lighter skin color. And she was fine with having that ashy look. And it was so sad because that's just a clear-cut sign that this child is really suffering internally, because of the fact that someone, somewhere along the way, has either, whether it was another child, a parent, a friend, whoever, could have been a family member, made a comment about her dark skin. And that child, in my opinion, now has a complex, and she thinks dark skin is not pretty.
Right, yeah.
And
no, I see this all the time in children. And even to the point where, you know, in Asia and even here in America, I see children who are, you know, it'll be like 90 degrees outside and they will wear the big brim hat with an umbrella, with the long sleeves, with the white gloves and long pants, because they do not want to get tan.
It's
such a shame.
Unbelievable. I remember a couple years ago, and I'm like a light brown skin complexion. I had gone to Mexico for a couple of weeks, and when I came back, my skin was very, very dark. And I thought I looked gorgeous. I just loved my color. You couldn't tell me anything. And when I remember a couple of people, and this is when I lived in New Jersey, they'd make comments and said to me, oh, my gosh, you're so dark. And ironically, which is just strange, and then I moved to a southern state, to Maryland. So, you know, I'm not an outside person because of my allergies, but I love when I would go out and get, you know, a nice tan in the summertime, and people would literally say to me, you're so dark, look at you. You looked better when your skin was light. And I'm saying, no, this doesn't matter. I'm still Donna, regardless of the color of my skin.
Yes.
Still me. And I also noted where there are a lot of issues that a lot of people have been telling me recently of how their children really just don't want to be in the sun. I'll go outside and on a Saturday in the middle of the daytime, sun could be blaring. I'll cut my grass because I love, you know, doing stuff like that. But everyone around me, and it's not because of the heat, it's because the sun is out. They don't want to come outside. And then when you start seeing children suffer from this, it's because they're being taught this. The Endura had a theory, the social learning theory, and in his theory he was talking about how children learn by observing. They observe and what they hear. So if they hear an adult saying that child is so dark, or her skin, or she's ugly because she's dark, that child is going to believe that. Or if they hear an adult saying it about another child, in turn, that child will go back to this little kid and say, hey, you know, you're ugly and you're dark because my mommy or my daddy said so.
Right.
And the sad part of it is that I think we really need to make sure that our children, first and foremost, understand that regardless of what color their skin is, the hair texture, the shape of their nose, the lips, that they are beautiful. And I watch Joe Osteen, and Joe Osteen always makes mention of telling people, you are God's masterpiece. You were made exactly the way God wanted you to be made. So why are you trying to change this? And I just think there needs to be more positive reinforcement for children. And I also think that when it comes to teaching, that perhaps maybe they need to implement this in some type of curriculum for teachers teaching young children, so they would know how to deal with these issues when children start talking about, I'm not happy because my skin is dark. Because it leads to late to complexes as they grow up. I've heard so many women as adults now start talking about the complexes or the issues they had and how they felt about themselves growing up as a dark complexion child. And as they reach adulthood, some of them, I could still see remnants of that still affecting them. So
yeah, I fully agree.
I just
yeah, I see that too.
It's just, you know, and I'm having conversations with people, and I had one young lady, I don't know, I think she's Filipino and black mixed, and she's much darker than I am, and she made a comment, her hair is very curly, beautiful girl, I think she's gorgeous. And I think she was 19 or 20, and she said to me, you don't know, you can't sit here and try and tell me that you think I look beautiful. You haven't lived my life. I've lived with this dark skin and this frizzy hair my entire life. And I'm saying, wait a minute. If I could leave my hair frizzy like that all day, I would love it, number one. And number two, her skin was, you know, Professor John Kim, her skin was beautiful. It's so smooth, like a baby skin.
Wow.
But unfortunately, she'd been so conditioned to believe that because her skin was that, it was like a really dark olive tan color, but she was gorgeous. She didn't see anything beautiful about her hair, about her nose, her lips, her face, nothing at all. So in order for her to deal, like I guess, with how she just hated herself or how she looked, she went through a phase where she was wearing entirely too much makeup, which made her skin look lighter. But in turn, she also looked like she looked made up. And you could just see the difference of the skin color, the makeup, and her neck, where her neck was dark and the face was light. And when I brought this to her attention, you know, she washed the makeup off so I could see how her skin color really looked. And I'm saying this woman has, you know, she's been so conditioned to believe that I'm ugly because I'm dark. Now, her brother and her sister were very fair. And I think the sister had curly hair, I don't remember. I know the brother's hair was straight. But this one particular young lady had an issue with it. And the sad part of it was is that she had her 6-year-old or 4-year-old. And I don't know if it was her daughter or a niece. But the child was dark complexion, and she was instilling the same nonsense into this child.
Oh.
And I had to say to her, I said, listen, if you don't stop the issues that you're suffering from right now, you're passing on to this child. Because you're telling her in so many words that her darkest complexion, her curly hair, her nose and her lips, all of those areas, you're saying it makes her ugly, and it does not. And then I also asked her, who defines beauty? And who in this world has the right to define the beauty standard for any person of color?
Right.
Just this week, I think, I forgot the name of the magazine, came out and said that Gwyneth Paltrow, I think they said she was the most beautiful person either in the world or whatever. But she fits the European ideal of the blonde hair, right, pale skin, sharp facial features. But in their opinion, in that magazine's their opinion, maybe that's how they feel, that is the ideal of beauty for them. But for me, a person of color, I'm looking and I'm saying, okay, this woman's not the most beautiful person in the world or alive or whatever the comment was. But when you see young children, even young women, seeing that put out on a magazine cover, instantly, if they have a real low self-esteem, they're going to start believing, I have to have that pale skin or the light skin and look something like that in order to be considered beautiful in the United States. And that's sad. Mm-hmm. And I always say to people, who makes the determination as to what constitutes beauty? And I think it gets dangerous when people start doing that, especially when you have people who are suffering from self-esteem issues because of their skin color. You know, and then we start talking about the skin lightening products and the bleaching. So in Asia, I read an article where that industry is making billions of dollars on skin bleaching products.
Yeah, it's a growing industry, and it continues to grow, sadly. And, you know, it's sad because a lot of these women think it's you know, these companies are doing it for them, so they will be more beautiful, but these companies don't care about them. They're just in it for profit.
Exactly.
And I wish a lot more of these women and the younger generation understood that they are beautiful, that God made them beautiful. And, you know, just because of their skin color, it's not a basis on which to judge them or say
right.
their worth.
Exactly.
And I've talked to some Asian women before and said, you know, when you see a dark-skinned woman or vice versa, I talked to a dark-skinned woman and said, you know, when you see a light-skinned woman, what does it make you think? And a lot of times, like, the dark-skinned girls think that if there is a lighter-skinned woman around, that they're out to, you know, steal something from them, steal
wow.
a boyfriend, steal their attention away. And interestingly enough, the lighter-skinned, if they're with a dark-skinned woman, will think, well, that woman doesn't have much to offer. You know, she's of the lower class, you know. And so there's just a lot of racism, preconceived notions based off, you know, the color of skin. And you would think we're both of the Asian race, you know, we need to stand together, be solid, but it's not there. It's your,
yeah.
your, you know, that's the first thing they notice is you're pale skinned, I'm dark skinned. We are different. I'm going to pass judgment on you.
And see, that's sad because even like in the black race, it was the same issue with, especially years ago with colorism in the light skin and dark skin communities, where you had the lightest complexion, where it was the belief that they looked better because their skin was light. And if they had like the straighter hair, or wavy hair and more Eurocentric type of phenotypes, they were considered, you know, appealing. They looked better. And that belief went on for so long. And then what disturbed me was that you started seeing it now where it's that old stereotypical view that lighter complexion are the good and they're the nice ones and the darker complexion are the bad ones who do, you know, the wrong things. And I just think that, you know, even though we see it, we know it occurs, colorism occurs across the board, it's amazing how similar, in a sense, it is when it occurs in both Asian, Black, Latino, and Asian Indian communities. There's so many similarities there with how
right.
it affects each group. Even though they're different, it's still that the bottom line is still that they're putting a higher value on lighter skin and a lower value on darker skin.
Right.
I think
also, I know. Oh, go on.
No, go ahead.
Oh, also, I know I've seen this in other Asian cultures, but especially with those who are Cambodian, that if there is a dark-skinned person that, you know, they don't know, they'll assume that that person is, you know, a fob, fresh off the boat, just came to America. Whereas someone who's dark-skinned, you know, in the Asian community, a dark-skinned person will see a light-skinned person and say, well, you're a sellout.
Oh,
I think that you tried to whiten your skin. You're selling out. You're not proud of being Asian, even though that person was born with lighter skin. So
wow.
it's kind of interesting to see that, you know, there are some big differences in just the whole judgment that is there between the lighter skin and a darker skin person.
So then it goes both ways. You have the lighter skin
yeah.
against the dark and dark against the light.
Right.
Wow, that's interesting, because I came up earlier with this theory where, and I'm working on a book on colorism and some articles, and the point that I was making was that how colorism, most people always have this dog belief that colorism is only about light-skinned people thinking they have the privilege, and that is the end of story. When in reality, colorism, you know, it goes both ways. It can be the light skin against the dark, dark against light. And in a study that I conducted, I even found out where medium complexion people were affected by colorism. Either they had an issue with light-skinned people or dark-skinned people, or with other medium complexion people who may be one or two shades darker than them.
Right.
So, it's, you know, you made an excellent point there, and a really great point, because I'm glad you said it, because our listeners really need to understand that colorism goes both, you know, it goes all across the board. It could be light versus dark, dark versus light. But let me ask you this. Have there been any, do you think that there's resentment among Asians when, you know, based on the lightness or dark of their skin, darkness of their skin color, for example, where a darker complexion Asian may resent a lighter complexion Asian just because they're light?
Definitely. And it has no reason. It's just based off judgment. But there is constantly, you know, someone who's lighter skin will pass judgment on someone who's darker skin. But, yeah, the same way a darker skin person will pass judgment on a lighter skin person, you know, again, calling them a sellout, calling them not really Asian. So, yeah, it's like there's no acceptance. If you're light, then you're not accepted. If you're dark, you're not accepted. But either way, the dark and light, you know, there is not a sense of unity there. There's always going to be preconceived judgment.
Right.
That influences.
And that's amazing how that it is, because even within the black community, when it comes to colorism, there have been instances where movie stars have been accused of lightening their skin, you know, having surgery done to make the nose narrow, and their facial structures in general changed. And what I find amazing, or I'm concerned with, is that when these people do actually go through this transformation, is what I call it, other members in the black community get so upset. And like you said, consider them a sellout, and they want to bash them. And I can understand them being upset with them lightening the skin and altering their appearance in this transformation process. But I think that they need to look at it on a deeper level, where they're saying, you know, there's something wrong why this person feels the need to make this total transformation. Now, if somebody has a disfigurement, I can understand having the surgeries done and everything. But I think everyone gets so angry when someone makes the transformation, either whether it's lightening the skin or the surgery. Within the black community, I noticed I forgot the name of the person who was just being bashed recently, because I think they believe this person bleached their skin. But my response is, okay, let's not tear them down. We already know that there is a psychological issue here at play that they're trying to deal with. And I don't think by bashing them or condemning them to hell is the right response. I think the response is to say, okay, there's something wrong there.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I remember reading about that, like Beyonce and Sammy Sosa.
Right.
Those two are dark-skinned. And then when it came out, whether in the magazine or when Sammy Sosa was giving some kind of interview, he had come out as a lighter-skinned person. And
lot
of people... Yeah, in the community were appalled and upset that he was not proud of his skin color, and he, you know, how dare they lighten the skin? Or even, remember that one girl who was in that movie, she was dark-skinned, Precious. The movie was called Precious, and she's a dark-skinned actress. And she was in a big-time magazine on the front cover, and they noticeably lightened her skin. I mean, she was like fair. She was like, a light coffee color, and there was outrage, and she had known nothing about it. But these magazine companies, you know, to sell the copies of their magazines will lighten the skin and make them more beautiful.
Yeah. That's something. They Photoshop them. And you know what's sad is because I've even noticed, and we could probably bring it up now, that even on television with commercials, and I had this conversation earlier with the guests when we talked about advertising and marketing and colorism issues, where even with magazine articles, covers of magazines, photographs, where they actually Photoshop these photos into the person's skin is so right. Mm-hmm. Until I'm saying that's not that person. And then when you look closely, you're like, oh, yes, it is. But that sends the wrong message to society, because even if you look at television, just the other day, and I've had been on this little campaign of mine for a couple of months now where I'm noting, where I actually try and catch as many television commercials as I can to see people of color. But in this particular, I think it's a Tide commercial where it's a Latino woman who doesn't even look Latino, who is speaking Spanish in the commercial. Right. Have you seen that one? And I was disturbed because I said, you know what, I'm glad to see that they're putting Latinos in television commercials and that they are speaking Spanish. But I'm more interested in seeing you have people represented on commercials that include people who are tan, medium, brown, and dark complexion of each racial category. Because what happens is that if you continue to have people on these commercials, especially on television, and they're always fair-skinned, and there's never any tan or brown skin. Now, with black Americans, it's the same thing. You will never see a very, very, very dark complexion black female in, really, in commercials on television. At least I have not. And right. It sends the wrong message to the communities, to people, regardless of what racial group or ethnicity you are. It sends the message, once again, light skin is the skin color that you must have. And I don't think that the companies realize the damage that's taking place when they're doing this. Yes, we understand they want to sell the product, but if you're going to show an Asian family, I would like to see an Asian family who's tan or dark complexion. Same thing with Latinos.
It's almost like the whole idea that if you have dark skin now in society, it's considered almost like you have a disease. There's something
exactly
wrong with you. Mm-hmm. Go to the doctor and get it fixed. Take the medicine that you need, you know, the skin lightener. But it's considered a sickness if you have dark
mm-hmm.
skin, because we don't see it. We don't see it in commercials. We don't see it on TV. We don't see it in magazines. So you must be sick.
And you know what? You made an excellent point, because that, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, and if you think about this over the next couple of weeks, just this week alone, between now and Sunday, if you just check television commercials, I'm willing to guarantee you will not see a darker complexion Asian. You will not see a very, very dark complexion black female or a Latino or Asian Indian. And what's sad in society is, like you said, they're saying to you in so many words, if your skin is darker, then we're not interested in you.
Right.
Or we're not going to put you on television. Yet these same people are using these very products that they're not being, they're not being included in the advertisements, but they use Tide. They use the Dove soaps. So I think we have a long way to go in this country just getting people in society or companies to embrace the beauty of the different various skin colors that all of us possess. And until we do that, I think we're going to see constant problems with colorism. My goal with starting this project was just to send a loud, clear message to the whole world. Listen, you know, people of color have been treated disparately for years, mainly because of the darkness of their skin color, the lightness. But we need to get to a point where when I turn on the television set or I pick up a magazine, I'm expecting to see a person of color, of true brown or dark complexions. And we're just not seeing any of this. And
right.
when I make an issue of it, and what's sad about it, even in the academic community, with projects that I was trying to work on and trying to get people involved, it's just sad when you see the reaction. But people are all into any discussion where they're damning people who lighten the skin. But I'm concerned that we're not seeing enough people concerned with having a discussion on, okay, what in the heck are we going to do to get rid of this colorism issue? I think if the people, society in general, the average, you know, guy or woman, we start having more conversations and programs and focus in on this skin color, the skin color issues, I think sooner or later it's going to send a message, you know, to the advertisers, to these big companies who have these products, and it's going to say to them, listen, we need to see, I want to see someone who looks like me when I turn on my television set. And I don't want to see, and it should not be that these people are being represented in a stereotypical manner, because that's another issue you have to deal with.
Right.
So, you know, when you start looking, it's just, it's amazing. So let me ask you this. Well, we talked about why we don't, you know, Asians on television, but why don't we see darker complexion Asians on television in advertisements? I mean, we just don't.
Well, yes, we definitely don't. And, you know, actually when we do, they're usually, you know, gang members, the bad guys. Because that's,
yeah,
you know, how the darker skinned people are. They're the bad guys, the crooks, the criminals, the troublemakers in society. And so, you know, people see on TV and they, when they are in real life walking down the street, if they see a dark skinned person, that's what they assume is happening. And at the same time, you know, the drug companies and the skin care companies are saying, you know, if you use my product, you're like one shade, one surgery away from being perfect. And that's what it's saying. You want to be perfect. So lighten your skin. And without even paying attention or thinking about that, you know, the desire for light skin is a kind of historical inequality that's forced upon, you know, minorities, especially women. And it's really sad. And, you know, for myself, this is something that I feel like I'm fighting with every day, especially as I have a daughter who's dark-skinned. I mean, this is the reason why I believe that I made the decision of putting her into modeling. She's a professional model, and
wonderful.
I wanted her to know that, you know, she is beautiful, and the fact that, you know, she is getting jobs for big name companies, they don't really look, they're not giving her jobs because of her, you know, skin color. They're giving her because of her personality or what they feel like, you know, she will add to a certain commercial or print ad.
And that's the key.
And I want to make sure that she rises up knowing that, you know, she can go run in the sun. She can go swimming. She doesn't need to hide and only come outside when, you know, there's a shade in the sky. I wanted to know, like, you know, don't be afraid of your skin turning colors. It's just skin. It will change. And, you know, this color of your skin is not the basis on which to judge you, because you have so much, many great things to offer the world. And that's what I want a lot of the young women and men to realize, especially in the Asian community, that they have a lot to offer and they should not be judged based off the color of their skin.
Well, see, you know what, I have to commend you. I think it's wonderful as a mom that you're taking that stand, and especially with your daughter, because if we saw more parents who, when their children experience these skin color issues, would do exactly what you're doing and say, you are beautiful, and let, you know, and then get her involved in activities that will bring that out, I think that is the key to helping them boost their self-esteem, and so that she's going to grow up being a well-rounded young lady who's going to look in the mirror and be like, wow, look at me, I'm gorgeous. And
yeah.
I always tell young people this, you know, you may not look the way you want to look as far as maybe your weight, your hair type or whatever, but I believe in taking what God has given you and enhancing it. I don't mean bleaching the skin, you know, or anything like that, but take what you have, enhance it. You know, try different hairstyles, try different clothing, and just embrace the beauty of your skin color. And that's the key, where people need to understand that regardless of how light or dark or your skin color is, you are still you. And no one can define who you are because they don't like your skin color. I noted this once at the end of one of my shows, that if somebody has a problem with your skin color, that's their problem. It's not yours.
Right.
And that's something they need to deal with. But let me ask you, when it comes to darker complexion Asians, how they're treated, let's say when they're being treated disparately because of their dark skin, are they treated worse in the United States or abroad?
That's a hard question. Because a lot of the ideas have come from, you know, the homeland country.
Right.
And and as much as, you know, a lot of people have lived here for many years or were even, you know, born here, those ideas are still part of the culture. And so, yeah, there's definitely still a lot of discrimination. I mean, I'd like to say we're in America and it's a great melting pot, and so people are much more open to people of darker skin, but I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely people here in America are into tanning their skin, and that's okay, but I know within the Asian culture, there's no reason why we would, you know, pay to go get our skin tanned. That is like something just very strange to think about. You know, you are supposed to maintain the whiteness of your skin. That is beautiful. That will move you up. That will give you identity. That will give you love even from your family and friends, and that's what you want. So, no, for you to go pay to get your skin tanned, no, that's preposterous.
Right. Do you think that, say, here in the United States with Asians, let's say when it, well, let me go back and say this. In the Asian Indian community, if there's this big, you know, they're focused more so in light skin as well. And in that community, someone who is light complexion because of their system that they have would marry someone who was light skin, even though they were poor, because of the light skin and the possibility of having a light skin baby. Does that hold true within the Asian community? Would do they have any issues where someone may say, well, this person isn't really on my level. They don't fit in with what I would really want in a spouse, but I'll marry them because they're light skin and I'm dark and I want a light skin child. Does that work the same way?
I don't think it's as prevalent as in the Indian Asian community, but definitely there is that thinking that when you are at the age of dating and especially when you get married, that you do take that into consideration because you do not want your children to be dark skinned because that's not beautiful, but also because you know the difficulty that child will go through of being raised in the Asian community and not being accepted. So yeah, that's definitely taking into consideration, but there's not so much in the like Chinese, Japanese, Korean community of the caste system. But
right.
I have had some friends. I have a friend from high school who she came from a very wealthy Asian Indian background, and the way that her younger brother rebelled against the parents was by marrying a dark skinned. Even though she was from a wealthy class, but a dark-skinned baby. And I remember the parents disowned him, even though he was, like, the only son.
Wow.
They disowned him because they thought that he was causing that next generation or even the family to lose faith and dirty up the generation line.
That's unbelievable. Wow. I mean, I know years ago within the black community, especially right after the Reconstruction era, where the communities were segregated, where lighter complexion blacks lived in one section of town, darker complexion blacks lived in another. And during that time, they practiced that, where light would only marry light to keep the bloodline light in the communities. And it's just sad, but when it comes to, like, dating, are there any arranged marriages, or is it just you just fall in love and get married?
Well, arranged marriages are more of the older generation, like my parents' generation, but you know what? There are still arranged marriages. They look at skin color, but they more look at social class for arranged marriages in this generation.
Yes, okay, good.
Yeah.
That's interesting. What about let me ask you also, when we start talking about colorism affecting Chinese, Filipinos, Koreans, and people from Vietnamese, does colorism affect each group the same way, or are there differences in how maybe a Chinese person or a Filipino may be affected by colorism?
I would have to say that those groups that you just named are all affected similarly in the same way. You know, it's the skin color, it's, you know, the lighter skin versus the darker skin, even the methods in which women will try to get the lighter skin through creams, through washes, through facials. It's all very similar methods and similar thinking. I think the only differences are more of like, you know, the feminine wipes have not yet come into the Chinese, the Japanese or the Korean culture yet. But I know it's very popular to have the feminine wash, the feminine wipes in the Asian Indian communities.
That's amazing. Well, what about when it comes to mixing, say, socially? Do lighter complexion, do lighter skin, do darker skin Asians, do they just mix regardless of whether they're light or dark skin, or is there a line between with the skin colors?
You know, I think now a lot of the generation that are in their 20s or younger, they are getting better. So there is not so much a line, and there's actually a lot of the you know, young people that I talk to, they do openly say I would like a darker skinned person, but definitely, you know, if they were ever to bring one home, there would be most likely uproar in the home.
Wow.
You know, their child is bringing a dark skinned person home because the bloodline would get tainted, and that can't happen. And, you know, nobody wants grandchildren who could possibly be dark-skinned. What would that do? That would cause them to lose space in
right,
the community.
That's sad that they actually believe it. But you know what? It sounds like colorism, and it's amazing because it is what it is. And I guess that's why it's so dynamic and it's so complex, because it seems to be the same across the board in the bulk of the group, racial groups, which is like light skin, dark skin dynamic going on. And within the black community, it has resulted in separatism and division of the race. Is it the same way with the Asian communities? Do you see that there's a line that's drawn down the middle where we have lights here and dark complexion on the other side?
I think that's more with, I mean, it's definitely, you can see that more with the females. The females are much more aware of that, and they do, even though it's not a spoken thing, it's a known thing that there is a line of difference, that light-skinned, you're more superior. And it's not, you know, based off your social class or your education, it's just the fact that you have light skin. So there is definitely a line drawn where the lighter-skinned female will think, I am superior than you. Like, you may have the better facial features or, you know, be more wealthy than me, but I have light skin, and that, you know, is more important than everything else.
Wow.
And they will openly, you know, flaunt. I'm light skinned.
That's amazing. Now, what about with the guys? Do guys don't really pick up on this too much, do they? The Asian men?
Well, you mean between the women or?
Or like with the Asian man, would Asian men treat each other disparately or differently because one is light and one is dark?
They're not so open about it, but as I said, the society now, they are fully aware of it, especially in Korea and China and Japan, that they will notice someone who's light-skinned versus dark-skinned because, you know, when you're out getting a job or you're trying to get a date or get married, they know that, you know, having the lighter skin is very important. It will get you what you want faster, even though you may not be qualified or you don't have the money or you don't have the education. But it will definitely open doors, and they are aware of that.
Well, what about, let's say, what about when it comes to the guys actually selecting a girlfriend or just say someone, a date? Or is there going to be that preferential treatment given to that lighter complexion Asian woman over the dark complexion woman?
So it's kind of like the men think, oh, it's okay when you're in the dating stage to play around with a dark-skinned girl, but when you get married, you settle down with a light-skinned girl. That's the thing.
Wow, amazing. I heard I had interviewed a couple of black guys a couple of months ago, and that was one of the comments that came out of it. And I know another friend of mine who's much older told me years ago that was, you know, how they just thought it's okay to play around with it, but you don't bring her home as a wife. And God forbid if she would get pregnant in the process. And it's just amazing because when I'm looking, you know, when I'm looking at how colorism really affects people of color, it's almost the same when you think about it. it's always that division or that separatism with light skin versus dark skin. Well, let me ask you, what about when it comes to the children? And we talked about your daughter earlier, but aren't darker complexion children treated differently than lighter complexion Asian children by family members, especially?
Yes, definitely. The grandparents, the mothers, the fathers, they hug, they love the lighter-skinned child more. It doesn't matter that, the light-skinned child misbehaves more as a troublemaker, because all that matters is this child is, the lighter-skinned, the one that will cause our family, or we don't have to worry about her getting married. Whereas the dark-skinned, they don't have very high expectations for that child. But they may push, go for the education, because we don't know. We don't know if you'll ever get married. So treatment is definitely different.
Well, what about when they're phenotypes? What happens when that child with the darker skin? Well, let me put it this way. If the child has lighter skin, but they come out maybe with a broad nose and fuller lips and curly hair, would those children with the lighter skin, would they still be treated better than a darker complexion child who may have the straight hair and maybe a narrow nose and thinner lips?
Yes, because of the lighter skin. Even though the facial features, the wider nose, the curlier hair, all that matters is the child has light skin. And, as I said before, my daughter has dark skin, and total strangers will just come up to me and say, oh, it's such a shame that she has nice features. She has the big eyes. She doesn't need plastic surgery on her nose or her eyes. She has nice lips. But she's a black child.
When you're doing it,
they actually...
That's just horrible. I mean, I think as a parent, I'd probably slap somebody really hard and be in trouble. But, when they say that, how do you feel as a parent? How do you feel? How does it make you respond?
I feel very angry, actually, because, the reason why I'm interested in this topic is because of colorism, is because I grew up with it. I have memories. I remember people commenting, oh, you have light skin, you'll go far. Or people just simply wanting to date me or marry me because I was a light-skinned Asian girl, who could have future light-skinned Asian babies. They didn't care about, my opinion. They didn't care, about my education. They just knew, she's light-skinned, she's good marriage material, she'll produce white babies, and that's all that matters, and she'll keep our bloodline and our generation pure and clean because she has pure and clean skin.
Unbelievable. Now, let me ask you, when your daughter started playing with dolls, what color dolls did you buy her? Did you buy a white or a tan color or dark complexion? What color dolls would you buy? Would you buy for her?
So when it was time for her to pick dolls, she was actually never into dolls. So her first doll that she actually became interested in was an American Girl doll. So I remember walking with her, and, when you go to the American Girl doll, there's dolls of every color. They don't have the correct facial features, but I let her pick. And I remember her saying to me, Mommy, the Hispanic girl has brown hair like me, but she's darker skinned than what I am. But this doll here has black hair like me, and she has light skin, but I don't think she's the Asian doll. And so, she ended up picking a very light-skinned Asian doll, but, even though the Hispanic one looked more like her.
Wow. Did they have a darker complexion Asian doll?
No. All the Asian dolls have the black hair. The nose is a little bit wider, but it's all the pale skin. Whereas the Hispanic-looking dolls, they're the brown hair with the darker-colored skin.
Do you think that the dolls that children play with, the color of the doll's skin, do you think that when that child picks that doll, is that representing, in your opinion, the color of the skin they would like to have, or is it just something they just find appealing?
Yes, I think it's the color that they would like to have, definitely. And also, you know, when I conducted some interviews with women, Asian women, and I gave them, you know, different shades of color, and I said, you know, match which color is yours. These women, they always picked the lighter skin that was not their color. They always picked the color that was like two or three shades lighter than what they were.
Isn't that amazing?
But at the same time, if they had to identify, okay, your friend over there, what color is she? They could easily identify. They matched the color easily. But for their own skin, women always identified their skin as lighter than what it was. And I think that's the thing with, you know, young children. Like, they pick the skin color that's lighter. I mean,
That is true. I have noticed that. And I've also, one of my friends is completing a PhD, and she was using, how was it now? I think she was looking at darker complexion black women's skin colors, and going through the process, she ran into issues where several women would actually categorize their skin as being much lighter. Like, I developed a skin color chart for my studies, originally in the PhD. I call it the Black Skin Color Identifying Chart.
Uh-huh.
And just recently, this year, I went back and I revised it, and I labeled it the Asian, Black, Indian, Latino skin color chart, and it was called the ABLE chart. And I went back and I revised it so that originally the first skin color chart had 48 skin colors, and I think there were like 15 maybe in each skin color category of light, medium, and dark. Then with the new skin color chart, there were 25 skin colors in the light category, 25 in medium, 25 in dark. So although I had increased the number, the colors that would truly represent various skin tones of people in Asian, Black, Indian, Latino communities, once we expanded the project to include all people of color, I'm now working with a team, and we're going back. And because there are more than just 25 skin colors that fit into the medium skin color category.
Right.
And right. I've even had people come to me through the ballot when I was originally validating the ABLE skin color chart, and they made comments that, well, to be honest with you, the skin colors you have represented in the light skin category, I've actually seen Latinos or Asians who are lighter than the skin colors you have there. So what we're doing is we're revising the skin color chart so it'll include a broad spectrum of skin colors. Where I'm afraid that we're going to end up with maybe about 40 in each.
Wow.
What's interesting about it is that we're actually matching them to true skin colors. And we're going to use that. We're going to end up using that skin color chart when we're conducting surveys and studies to help people identify their skin color. But it's interesting because you made a point where women will, if it's their own particular skin color, they do have a tendency of saying that the skin color of their skin is lighter than what it actually is. And when the student was actually finishing her dissertation, she noticed that women were actually saying, no, I'm like maybe an M2, when their skin was maybe an M15.
Yeah, that's different.
Right, so they were really saying that they were really much lighter than what they were. So then I said, well, you know what, let's go back and let's look at the skin colors again. And when I actually had some people validate the chart with me, and I would ask them, you know, to just let me know which color you think represents your skin. I also ran into a situation where I would look at someone and say, okay, she's definitely like maybe an M7, and that person would say to me, I'm an M1 or I'm an L25.
Oh.
And I found it amazing. So, you know, I documented all of that down because I found it amazing that women were picking skin colors on the skin color chart that were really, and here's the thing, it wasn't a mistake, it wasn't the lighting. They actually believed that your skin was actually lighter than what it really was. And they classified themselves as, categorized your skin color as being lighter.
I think that's why, like, even when you see women, minority women shopping for concealer for their face, they always pick the lighter skin, you know.
They certainly do, you're right.
The salesperson will be like, no, that's not your color, but they'll always pick the lighter color because they want to be seen as lighter.
That's true. You're right about that. I have noticed that, and it's interesting that you said that because even with makeup. I wear MAC makeup, and when I was in the mall one time buying it, I remember this, and it was, I laughed when I walked out of the mall because I was like, this is so ridiculous. But a browner complexion woman was in the store, and the guy was telling her the skin, you know, the color foundation that she needed. And she was like, no, this is the color that I want. And he said, no, dear, this is the color that you need. This matches your skin. And, you know, it was funny because I said, oh, my gosh, this woman really believes that her skin is that lighter complexion, that lighter color. And it's not. And, and what I have seen women do, and this, especially when I was younger as a child in church, there was one particular woman that would come to church every Sunday. She's very dark complexion, but she wore makeup that made her skin look, her face look really, really white.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of the younger kids, he said, you know, she looks, she belongs in Murray's. And Murray's was a funeral home, a funeral parlor. And in other words, she looks, she's dead because her skin looks, you know, so weird. But I remember as a child of women doing that with makeup. And when I was in the MAC makeup store, and the woman, she insisted that the gentleman uses, you know, I guess he's going to make her face up a sample makeup. She actually wanted him to put that lighter complexion, and he adamantly, you know, he was being very professional, and he just basically told her, if I put this on you, you're going to look terrible. And, I, you know, the idea of wearing makeup is so that you don't look really made up. You know, you look natural. But she wanted the light skin color, and she became huffy, and she just walked out of the store. And when I was walking to my car, I said, you know what? It's sad because she really wanted that. She wanted that lighter makeup because she wanted her skin to appear lighter. Not thinking that, you know, unless you put it on your neck, her hands, her ears are going to stay the same color. So I just think that when we start looking at the color as an issue and how it affects people of color, there, it's in so many ways it's so similar to all the different racial groups. It's just amazing. But my biggest concern is how it affects the children, especially Asian children, especially with your daughter. I think the way you're handling everything with her is perfect.
Thank you.
That's the ideal way. We're working on a study now. We're putting together a team to work on a study with colorism in children, and I will definitely be contacting you to work with the team on that, because what we need are parents who will to say to their child, you are beautiful. Skin color.
And actually, go on.
No, go ahead.
Oh, no, it's interesting that you bring that up because, you know, I was talking to one of the Christian publishers like 6 months ago, and she, you know, when I was talking about, you know, I want to write a book based off my daughter and the skin color issues that she's going through, and, you know, she actually said, like, there is not a book out there. There's not a book out there to address skin color issues in children.
No,
someone needs to write it. And it's like, it floored me because I'm thinking how there's books about boogers, there's books about like poo. There's no books to address the different skin colors in children and how to be proud of it.
You know what?
Hi.
You have to, I will definitely talk to you offline about this, but there's a project that another colleague and I were thinking about taking on. I will definitely, we'll talk about this offline, and I'll send you an email with the information in it, because I think, see, it needs to come from a parent's perspective, because you are a parent, and you have dealt with it, you've addressed it, you're handling it, because children need to see, okay, I am beautiful regardless of my skin color. And when you see a parent stopping and saying to a child, because I've even heard parents say, oh, stop that nonsense, and, you know, get over it. I've also heard parents say, well, if you weren't so, you know, damn dark, if your hair wasn't so kinky or nappy, I mean, just say horrible things to the children, not thinking, okay, this is registering, and this is something that's going to sink in, and it's going to stay within that child forever, because I look in the mirror and I don't like what I see. And then mommy even said I was dark and ugly or my hair was bad. These things stay with children forever. When those children turn into adults, they're still dealing with these demons that never really had to be in place and should never have existed but for someone saying it and just pushing it. So I think it's a area that definitely needs to be addressed, because, and it's not just, and I was trying to say this to a colleague a couple of weeks ago, colorism is not just affecting little black children. It's Asian, Indian, Latino, Brazilian, children in Africa, all across the globe. You know, children with darker complexions are really suffering because what they're being taught and what they see on television. I remember when I was a child in my school, my textbooks in school, we had Sally, Dick, and Jane, and they were white. There was never a black child in the school book. So, you know, we need to start seeing more children. I haven't looked at a kid's book in years, but I think when we start seeing more children of color in the little textbooks they use in school, if we start seeing more representations of children of color in commercials, people of color in general in advertisements and commercials, and if we just start pushing, you know, you can be beautiful regardless. I remember, I can't really think of the name of it. I'll have to remember and I'll email it to you. Where it was also an issue of talking, dealing with a little girl and skin color, but you're the first parent I've ever talked to who's handled it so well, and I commend you for that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I commend you for
that. A lot of prayer.
You're right. That's it, the prayer, because you do need that, because it's dealing with that, with you as a parent alone having to deal with it, plus deal with your child and keep her focused and motivated and loving herself. It's a lot to do.
Yeah,
it's a lot, but this has been a wonderful conversation, and I thank you for your time. Is there anything else you'd like? You know, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, not at all. But definitely, I'm glad that, you know, again, that you have organized something to address this issue, because it's so important yet so ignored, and or it's just been in the closet for so long. So thank you so much for even you know, building this up. You definitely have something worthwhile.
Thank you. I mean, thank you so much. It's a hard work, and there are times when I get so frustrated and down with it, because you don't always get people willing to, you know, talk about it or deal with it, and there's a lot of negativity. But like I said to my friend the other day, I said, regardless of what happens, this is my passion, and I'm never going to stop doing this until the good Lord says, you know, you're too tired, you're too worn, or I'm bringing you home. But I want to just thank you. I appreciate the compliment. Thank you so very much. And I will definitely be in touch with you. And I also think it would be important also for parents, if they're interested in talking to you, would it be okay if they contacted you via your Twitter account?
Oh, absolutely. I would love that.
Okay, parents and listeners, you can reach Professor Jung Kim. Her Twitter account is at Julie, J-U-L-I-E, J-U-N-G, Kim. That's how you can reach her at Twitter. And she'll be working with us with the Colorism Project. But just for parents in general, if you're dealing with issues with your children, skin color, colorism issues, Professor Jung Kim is, I consider, a source to go to and talk to. And I thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to you working with us at the Colorism Project.
I look forward to it, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
You too. Bye.
Okay, bye. Okay, listeners, just a reminder, that's Professor Julie Jung Kim, and you can reach her at Julie Jung Kim on Twitter. It's been a wonderful conversation about colorism in the Asian community. I want to give you all an update on everything we've been working on the project since we haven't been able to talk in a while. We're actually working on, as usual, my regular, we're still working on the Taco magazine. The team and the staff there, they're about to kick me out and fire me because I think I'm in their hair too much, but I think it's great. They still love me. So Taco magazine is coming along with the planning. It's so much work. And Professor Jung Kim will be writing a column in our magazine also. With regard to the Journal of Colorism Studies, I want to remind you that the deadline for submissions has been pushed back, and I'm really interested in seeing articles from graduate students, students who are in like master's degree, graduate degree, even any level. Feel free to write an essay, highlight, present your research, a book review. The deadline is August 31st, and I do believe that is correct. You can also check it on our on the journal's website, which is jocsonline.org, and that stands for Journal of Colorism Studies Online.org. With our website, I'm in the process of actually redesigning, because I love developing websites. I am in the process of redesigning the website, so it may be down for a couple of days or weeks, depending on how quickly I can get it back up. So that's in the motion. Also, with the talk radio show, you will see a new listing and update of episodes that will be coming up over the summertime. We'll have really interesting guests coming up. Next week, we'll have Dr. Elizabeth Horge Freeman, and she will be discussing colorism within Afro-Brazilian families, and that's going to be a wonderful discussion. Dr. Horge Freeman was scheduled to come on the show with us earlier, but due to the technical issues, we had to reschedule both of those shows. So we're looking forward to that. We also have a wonderful guest coming on board over the next couple of weeks. Let's see, and I can give you just a brief update of what some of our topics will be. We will be discussing colorism in Jamaica, and Dr. Petra Robinson would be our guest to discuss that, and I'll confirm the date with you. We also have Dr. Linda Wilson-Jones will be coming on to discuss colorism, faculty, and administration. Other guests, I have to go back and find my list, and I can update that on the website, which will be done shortly. But I think it's interesting because what we're doing, everyone, with the Colorism Project is that we are expanded and we're growing, and we're really, really getting a lot done. I'm happy about the project. I'm glad that I actually did start. It's a lot of work. I am looking for interested people to work with me on the Colorism Project, especially with the Taco Magazine. I think it would be interesting if you like to write and you write well and you're interested in maybe writing a column for Taco Magazine, please send your writing sample to me. You can send it to me at drculbreth@colorismproject.com. We're looking at various areas for the magazine, and I will update that also on the website as well as our WordPress blog. Also working on a national survey on colorism, and I put together a team, and we're actually developing this survey that will be administered out. We're anticipating collecting over 20,000 pieces of data. So that's an exciting project, which will be a good summer focus for all of us. Other than that, everyone, so far, everything is going great. I do believe that I have updated you on everything with the Colorism Project. Oh, also, we're still working on the conference on colorism. I have pushed the date back into 2014, and the planning committee is working on identifying the actual date and the location and everything we're going to do with the particular conference. With regard to the play that I wrote, Colorstruck, I will begin getting that set and ready because we're hoping to have that produced sometime either toward the end of this year, if not toward the end of this year, early next year. So it's just a lot of work. So I ask that you be patient. I do thank all of my listeners for tuning back in, and I thank you for your patience over the past couple of weeks when we were going through a little bit of issues with technology. So everyone, it's been a great show tonight. I'm glad that we're back up and flying with the show, and we didn't have any technical issues tonight. Looking forward to next week, and have a great weekend, everyone. Good night. Thank you for tuning in to The Dynamics of Colorism with your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth. You may contact Dr. Culbreth at 1-800-905-2136. You may email your questions to drculbreth@colorismproject.com. We're looking forward to you tuning in next Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Until then, remember, dare to be different and dream in color. This is Dr. Culbreth signing off for The Dynamics of Colorism. Good night, everyone.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.